Take a deep breath. And remember, there's a power. Breathing you. This is your space of sanity in an evolving world, where we learn about spiritual law and how to apply it to our lives in a way that is practical and life-changing. This is where we remember truth to make the world a better place, one person at a time. I'm Claire Lautier, inspirational speaker, teacher of the technology of transformation, and a certified life mastery consultant and spiritual growth mentor. Welcome to the Grace Space. Children are inherently wild and natural creatures. As children, we put everything in our mouths. We lick the dirt. We smear all kinds of things into our skin. We handle bugs. We're proud of our bodily functions, delighted with our poop, peeing in the bathtub, picking our noses with fascination, and offering up the goods to whoever happens to be nearby. We revel in nakedness and examine our body parts. Our emotions are raw and savage. We express how we feel loudly and without compunction, speak the truth out of the mouths of babes. We're unself-consciously ourselves until we aren't. Something changes. We lose our wildness. Our society and well-meaning parents tell us dirt is dirty. Poop and pee are yucky and toxic. Don't touch yourself. Sit still. Be quiet. You have to have shoes on. Don't mess up your clothes. Don't climb that. Put that down. We get civilized, and our wildness becomes a distant memory. There's an old home movie of me, a silent one. Back then, we didn't have the capacity to record sound, only images. I was about 3 years old, racing into the living room, stark naked after a bath. You can see my mother pursuing me with a towel as if I were a greased pig, impossible to catch. In the living room are her mother, my grandmother, who was visiting, and my father, both with cocktails. Their respective reactions to my fleet-footed laps around the room say it all. My grandmother is slightly aghast, covering her face, turning away, and my father is laughing with delight at my abandon. I have a look of pure, ecstatic thrill on my face. Or at least, that's the feeling I remember, because somewhere I do remember this moment. I'm alive. Life force is coursing through me and I must run. You ever notice how children run everywhere? This 30-second film in silence is a moment where that child is suspended between wildness and civilization. I'm about to get the message somewhere that it's not appropriate to run around naked and I should be covered up in PJs. That's my grandmother's energy, mitigated by my father's obvious merriment at my spontaneous streaking. I'm feeling, without words, a mixed message in the room. I'm about to grow up with a highbrow sense of propriety, shot through with an irreverent and sometimes scatological lowbrow sense of comedy. It's the moment where my future was sealed as a poised, well-spoken, Ivy-educated, top-of-the-class good girl who owns a fart machine. Or nowadays, a fart app. And who will use it? Oh yes, I will. When you least expect it. I got so far away from that child that I almost forgot about her. And so far away from that natural unself-consciousness that I couldn't remember what it felt like not to be all tied up in knots trying to accomplish something and be someone. Some years ago, my sister-in-law sent me a video of my niece, who was probably about the same age as my streaking self at the time, sitting in the high chair being fed a dinner of beets. This is one of my favorite videos of all time. There she is, covered from head to toe in beets, beet juice, bits of beets in her chubby fingers, one hand holding the little plastic spoon like a weapon, her hair literally sticking straight up and out all over her head as if she had used beet puree as hair gel, gazing eerily into the camera as she feeds herself with her little fingers, slathering beet bits into her mouth, chewing and smacking her lips, breathing audibly like a wild animal, and clearly enjoying herself immensely. It looks like a horror movie, as if Chucky-like, she just murdered someone and is gleefully feeding on their still beating heart after bathing in their blood. To top it all off, this bizarrely barbaric moment is completed by a counterpoint of plinkety-plunkety children's xylophone nursery rhyme music in the background. It's completely insane, which my sister-in-law swears just happened to be what was playing when she documented this deliciously demented snippet of savagery. Watching that video sent me into the kind of spontaneous, borderline crazy laughter that makes people a little uncomfortable around you, like you might be going off the rails. Maybe it resurrected in me the memory of that wild, innocent, ecstatic human child of long ago. When there's an agenda afoot to turn us into complacent, compliant automatons for whom our true nature as source energy beings is but a distant memory, and there is an agenda around that, we need more than ever to come back to nature and reconnect with our wildness. We need to be reminded that we are human beings. Our wildness is intimately connected to our oneness with Mother Nature, with our planet, with our intuitive self, with our body, with our divine birthright of joy, aliveness, and freedom. Feeling our wildness completes the circuit somehow. It plugs us back into what it is to be fully human beings of spiritual origin, fully human and fully divine. One does not preclude the other. Sacred intimacy is the naturalness of simply being as you are. And that's anchored in your wildness. Just be you, my teacher said to me emphatically. Just be me. Well, what does that even mean? I remember thinking. He sliced through my uncomprehending earnestness with the white hot sword of truth. Be you, natural. No mask, not twisting or distorting yourself into the shape for others. Just be you. It took me some time to even compute what that was, because I couldn't really feel it, you know? And I came to understand it as the state of being so okay with yourself as you are, so accepting of your humanness, of your fallibility, of just the being that you are, unselfconscious, naked before yourself and before God and before others, relaxed, open, undefended, soft, honest. You know, it's that moment when you're with another person, whether you know them well or not, and you get uncomfortable, like you have to make conversation, you have to fill the silence. You know, you get a little agitated inwardly, a little uncomfortable, like you don't know what to say, or you got to come up with something, right? That is, that moment of self-consciousness there is indicative of our not being at ease with ourselves. The more at ease we are with ourselves, the more at ease we are with another person. There's this compulsion to fill the silence, to be someone or to draw someone out so that they're not uncomfortable and you're not uncomfortable, kind of goes away as you hew to the true you. Well, most of us have so many masks, and not only that, but we're trying to figure out which of the masks is really us. The answer is none of them. None of those masks are you. The true you is unadorned, simple, low maintenance. Its needs are basic and few. It is self-sufficient and self-resourced. It lives in a state of trust. It knows itself as a closed system that is perfectly designed, fed by divine energy, heals itself when given the chance, and lives in harmony with nature. The true you, the sacred, intimate you, is uncomplicated, without guile, like a child. It's a wild child. So what about you? Are you still wild? Or has your wildness been civilized all the way out of you? How far have you drifted from nature? When I lost my wildness, I became afraid of nature. I'll say nervous around it. I didn't feel in the groove with it. I didn't feel soothed by it. It made me nervous. I thought dirt was dirty. I was afraid of bugs, especially spiders. When I was really little, maybe 4 or 5, and I woke up crying from a nightmare, my mother came into my room, and I have a memory of this. I recounted what I had dreamed, and I know this because it's also a story that was often retold in my family. In the dream, a spider dropped down on its web, on its filament of web, right by my face, and said to me, "Don't be afraid." Apparently, I said it just like that. Don't be afraid. I'm not sure why that was classified as a nightmare in my psyche, because it's adorable. And obviously, the message was, don't be afraid. But I woke up crying from that dream, afraid. You know, the spider's shamanic message was completely unheeded. Imagine being afraid of something that tells you not to be afraid. I think that says a lot about my developing psyche. I'm not sure when I lost my wildness. I grew up in suburban United States outside Washington, D.C., on a fair amount of processed food, in an air-conditioned house with fluoride in the water in the 1970s. My father was a psychiatrist, and I remember that we had all these little blank notepads around the house with strange, really long words on them and images of little pills. Well, later in life, I realized that those were the calling cards of the various pharma companies peddling the latest drugs. Natural solutions had lost a lot of ground to the modernity of pharmaceuticals as the solution to most physical and mental health problems. And I'll tell you what, when I go back to the United States and visit my mom, for example, if the television is on, every commercial break is commercials for pharmaceutical drugs. They own the networks. So it's like this was starting back then, finding these little notepads. We used to use them to, you know, jot down notes next to the telephone or whatever. They were all these pharmaceutical drugs. No one was really interested in asking why you were sick, why you were out of tune with nature and the rhythms of life, right? The solution was a pill. And it's still dominantly that way in the allopathic model. But back then, there were a lot fewer rules, right? There were no seat belts in the car. You just slid around. There were no computers, obviously. There were no cell phones or smart anything. We were allowed to roam wild as children, and I played outside a lot. There was a bank of honeysuckle growing on a fence by the park near our house, and I remember picking them from the bush, pulling out the stamen, and sucking the sweet nectar out of the flower. There was one drop per flower. It was the food of the gods. I also had a relationship with a particular tree. It went up a couple of feet and then took a 90-degree turn. It was like a horse's back. I spent a lot of time on that tree, and I used to talk to it and play there by myself. Sometimes my dad would take us for a walk down to the Potomac River, and we would throw a stick for the dog. She would swim out and retrieve it, fording the strong current of the river to bring it back. I can remember her little head above the surface carrying that stick. I also loved the independence of riding my bike here, there, and everywhere. I would go downtown. I would go to the church we used to go to. It was, you know, empty and left open. It was a country church on top of a hill dotted with all these dogwood trees. And it was left open anytime. And I would sometimes ride my bike to the church, park my bike outside, go into the church and sit down and contemplate all by myself. As a child, I loved doing that. And I also loved going to the end of the developed part of our neighborhood. You know, it was one of those new neighborhoods and, you know, eating into the woods little by little. And I would go to the end of the developed part where the last newest houses were still being built. And there were these woods beyond there. They seemed dark and mysterious, like you could get lost in there. One time while we were in Corsica as a family, I remember going down to the rocky beach by myself when I was all of 8 years old and swimming in the warm, shallow water with a mask and snorkel and flippers, looking at all the underwater life with deep pleasure and awe, and suddenly being stung by a jellyfish all along my belly. The shock sent me racing in fright back to the shore. You know, many people share memories of feelings of passionate wildness from childhood. Common natural experiences like running outside barefoot until dark, catching fireflies in a jar, spinning like a top, looking up at the sky until you fell down on the ground, dizzy and dazed as the world spun around, rolling down a grassy hill, being sprung from the classroom into the courtyard at recess, running like mad, and being lifted by the wind as a storm is brewing, electrified and screaming with wild abandon. I remember these moments. They're very strong. These are moments of connectedness, of oneness with nature, and how our body relates to it and is part of it. As the years passed, I lived in big cities where nature was far away. During my years in New York, I joined a hiking club that used to go to the Catskills every other weekend. So there was the pull of nature again, and I obeyed it. To be honest with you, I also thought I might meet some guys that way, but I didn't. I enjoyed the hiking part, but when we would sit down in the woods to have our bag lunch, I never felt comfortable. I was afraid of the bugs. I was afraid of being crawled on by a spider. I was afraid there might be a snake somewhere. Some people seem truly at ease and deeply happy and relaxed sitting on the earth. Not me. I was tight and uptight without knowing why. I couldn't reconcile these flashes of memory, these ecstatic moments of passionate freedom, sunshine, honeysuckle, horse tree, bare feet, grass, spinning, rolling, swimming in the sea, running in the wind, thunder, lightning, being totally turned on and vibrating, intensely alive, with how I ended up, somehow, tense, tight, unable to sit on the earth and just relax. What the hell happened? The loss of wildness translates to a loss of trust in nature, in life, and the implicit order of the universe. And I think that my loss of wildness on the individual level was just a reflection of the loss of wildness that we have suffered collectively. Those energies that seek to control and dominate us don't want us to be connected to nature. They steer us toward enslavement disguised as convenience, to packaged lab foods devoid of life force, to addiction to GPS replacing an intuitive sense of direction. I mean, do you remember what it was like before GPS, when you had to find your way somewhere either using a map or just figuring it out? We hardly ever do that anymore. Wildness is a threat to any agenda that seeks to separate us from who we really are. Once my husband and I went camping in the Pinery, a popular campsite in Ontario right on the lake. After I lost my wildness, I was nervous about camping and avoided it while pretending to like it and wishing I could go. In conversation, people would say, oh, we're going to go camping this weekend. I'd be like, oh, isn't that great? I wish I could go. I didn't mean that at all. And my mother would quip, my idea of roughing it is a hotel without room service. And I guess I kind of grew up to embrace that philosophy too. I didn't exactly grow up camping in the wild. That was not part of our family life. But so many people love camping, I thought it must be good for you. I wanted to overcome my anxiety about it and compensated by acquiring things to buffer me from nature, such as the biggest blow-up mattress that would keep me far from the earth. I remember a friend telling me at the time that one of her favorite things was to sleep on the ground when she went camping. And as she said that to me, I flashed in my mind to that ginormous blow-up mattress that I had, like keeping me 3 feet from the ground on a bubble of air. But my mind was swarming with bothersome what-ifs. When you go camping, where do you pee and poo? Like, what if I have my period? What if spiders get into the tent? What if I'm cold? What about wild animals? I felt unequipped and uncomfortable, a fish out of water. There was a fear there. Later, it dawned on me with great feelings of betrayal that I had never in my life been taught any truly useful skills, like how to grow an organic garden, how to build a fire, how to build a shelter, how to create a water filtration system, or how to forage wild food. I had a secret fear that if I were ever to become lost in nature somewhere, or if the systems of the world should collapse, I would quickly die. So I think this was the feeling that I was trying to keep at bay. It made me feel insecure. Anyway, that night, with my husband at the Pinery, we sat out in camp chairs around a little fire, built by my husband, of course, and enjoyed the farmer's market snacks that we'd brought from civilization, along with substantial amounts of wine. Although I never was much of a drinker, I had been known to tie one on occasionally, and my husband dubbed me college girl gone wild once I'd had a few. It was as if that naked, streaking toddler was liberated again, and I started to feel that sense of freedom and fun that had become more elusive as I piled on the masks and got older and got a bit beat up by life. Sidebar, that upon the few occasions I've had to do some clown, like actual clown, not just clowning around, which I do often, my clown is also prone to hanky-panky, such as removing its clothes and pointing at its belly button. That clown lives to be inappropriate and longs for a return to wildness. So that night at the Pinery, I drank more than I normally would to calm my nerves about being in nature rather than the controllable environment of my comfortable house. And I don't remember much, frankly, except that eventually I woke up in the dark to find myself fully flat on my stomach on the ground outside the tent with no blanket or anything on me or between me and the forest floor. Clearly, I had passed out somewhere along the way, face down, and I have no idea how long I had been there, or why my husband was inside the tent and I was outside. But my first thought was, wow, I slept on the earth, and I was so passed out that I didn't worry about spiders. I realized with a kind of wonder that I had been totally relaxed, enough to sleep for some period of time, completely prone on Mother Earth. I was only slightly dismayed by the fact that I'd had to get completely pie-eyed to do it. The greater part of my feeling was hopefulness that maybe my relationship with nature could be rehabilitated, since I was still alive, having slept on the earth unmolested and definitely not covered in spiders. Look, I don't know where the spider phobia came from, but I may come by it genetically. My dear Aunt Mary, my mother's oldest sister, and a real eccentric character who claimed a streak of insanity ran through our family, duh, to which my mother replied, "Honey, it's not a streak, it's a five-lane highway." She once came to stay with us. My mother said she woke up in the middle of the night to find that the light was still on in the living room. When she padded out to turn it off, she found my Aunt Mary sitting lengthwise on the couch with her knees up and a blanket over her, wide awake, instead of upstairs in the guest room in bed. She said, "Mary, what are you doing down here? Why are you still up?" And my Aunt Mary replied, "Honey, I'm watching for spiders." I swear. A major player in the rehabilitation of my relationship with nature and the return of wildness was the time that I spent at the ashram in France, where I still go regularly. Immersion in nature is a big part of the process there, and I understand why now. I found much, much healing in the powerful icy cold mountain river, and many of our tests, shall we say, were conducted in nature. Camping is encouraged, as is bathing in the river, using the dry toilets, getting used to the cold, and so on. When I was a student there, I always felt super tense the first few days, and I would always have this really powerful headache. But then something would change. I would begin to relax and feel more at ease sitting in the grass. I kept my eye out for critters, but that anxiety was no longer in the foreground. I started to feel like I belonged to the earth, to nature, like I was meant to live on the earth and in harmony with nature. So over the years of my training there, the spider phobia kind of got downgraded to a more manageable fear, which I dealt with by specifically not watching for spiders or checking all the corners when I was staying in a room rather than a tent. When I came to live at the Forge, where I still am, the relationship to and symbolism of spiders was markedly accentuated. Never have I seen bigger or more terrifying spiders than in my own house. The first time I saw one that was practically tarantula-sized, I honestly thought to myself, I don't know if I can live here now. I can't unsee that. My skin would crawl and I could feel them lurking. I came to understand that this was an outward representation of inner fear. As the pressure in my psyche increased from living on that land, you know, I've often described that place as a kind of crucible energetically for me. As time passed and I felt myself cracking open from the inside, unable to live with anything in me that was inauthentic, spiders played a role in my awareness of what was going on in the depths of my subconscious. I could often feel, as I said, that I was about to see a big spider, and within a short time, out of the corner of my eye, I would catch a movement, and there it was, crawling across the floor. I was like, where did it even come from? It was as if it had materialized out of thin air. There was a period of several months where I saw a number of big ones right in my bedroom. Ooh, my whole body would be covered in shivers and goosebumps. It was a feeling of primal fear and horror. And I knew that my deepest fears were being projected onto the mirror of reality and represented to me in the form of these spiders in my bedroom, the most intimate place in me, right? That's the symbolism. Like, what I was not ready to admit yet consciously, what I was not yet ready to deal with on the practical level, the fear that was at the source of any inauthenticity in me and in the way I was living my life was showing up to galvanize me into action. Because seeing the spider, I would spring up like bounce up from the bed or the chair, suddenly extremely alert and present, if I hadn't been before, and speaking in a loud voice to myself, "God, oh God, damn it, that's big, okay, okay, okay." And I would talk to myself and walk with determination to fetch my best friend the vacuum. I never wanted to kill any spiders. I don't want to kill anything. I just didn't want to see them. Interesting, right? So I would suck them up with the vacuum and then empty the canister outside, as far away from my room as possible. Sometimes the spiders were too big to be sucked up by the crevice tool, okay? I'd have to put a tool on there with a bigger opening. And once the scary beast was relocated to the inside of the vacuum and then outside to nature, I would go back inside, check my entire room, and sit up for a while, unable to sleep or relax, just like my Aunt Mary. And I'd be like, okay, universe, I get it. I know these represent my inner fears, and they're not just in my recurring dreams anymore, because I have a long history of recurring dreams of spiders and basements and webs blocking my path, and they're always horribly anxious dreams. Now, this is in my waking life, right in front of me, and this powerful, galvanizing energy of fear must be transmuted into action. I can't spend my life being paranoid about spiders. I refuse to be a prisoner of this. And I understand it's not about getting rid of spiders in my world. It's about dissolving the fear in me that is driving me and making these spiders appear. What stands between you and the true you? Fear. Every single time. There's a resistance to facing whatever we fear the most. But what feels like a curse and a frustrating limitation is potentially the greatest gift for liberation. How do we lose touch with our wildness? Through the construction of the psyche. All the buildup of artifice, the many layers of masks, the different voices in our heads, the samskaras that we live to avoid and to distract ourselves from. All of this obscures and covers up the wild child that we once were. And we see how this corresponds on the level of the collective, in the way that our world has become synthetic, artificial, unhealthy. This is just a reflection on the collective level of our own individual states of separation. Nature is the great medicine for this illness that we all have, most of us. Take your shoes off and put your bare feet on the ground. Swim in the river, in the ocean, in the lake. Do not fear the sun. Bathe in the moonlight. Go out under the stars. Come back to your body and its natural wisdom. Trust it. Get to know all of it. Don't just cover up your symptoms with whatever is at hand. Be curious about, why is this happening? Why am I feeling this way? What is my body trying to tell me? Eat real food. Go for a walk without your phone. Wear natural fabrics. Turn off the news. Do one thing at a time. Don't fill the silence in a conversation. Relax. Let go. Surrender. There are many practices that can help us get wild again and reconcile with nature and ourselves, some of which we're going to be discussing in the coming weeks. Go wild. Reawaken that wild child in you, the innocence and unself-consciousness of the true you, tempered now by the depth of wisdom you've acquired from having strayed from the path. That was no mistake. There can be no mistakes. There's no way you can make a mistake in life. Divinity has given us free will to explore every aspect of consciousness, and we must do so. The further away we've strayed, the more joyful the homecoming, just like the lesson of the prodigal son in the Bible, whose father loves him even more than before when he returns after having spent his inheritance, squandered everything, and royally messed up his life. We are all this prodigal child. Father Sky and Mother Nature are waiting for us with open arms to come back home and rejoin our cosmic family. Go wild again and reunite yourself with the elemental world, with all of life. Just be you, a fractal of all that is. Simple, right? See you next time. Meanwhile, walk in grace. Thank you for joining me in the grace space, where you're always in the right place. If you love this podcast, I invite you to subscribe to it and submit a review.